It could have been me, but instead it was you. So I'll keep doing the work you were doing as if I were too. I'll be a student of life, a singer of songs, a farmer of food, and a writer of wrong. It could have been me, but instead it was you. And it may be me, dear sisters and brothers, before we are through.
That's Holly Near singing It Could Have Been Me, one of the songs that made many people remember who she was, a song she wrote after Kent State. And many of her songs have talked about political change, social change, human rights, and of course many other things she sings about as well. She's coming to Baltimore. Harry says her latest album is called Peace Becomes You. And Holly Near, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, and thanks for doing the program you just did and talking about our different roles of sexuality and your willingness to talk about that as a man. It's just, you know, it just moves me so, because it
thank
should
you.
Be true, but it happens so seldom that you're surprised and go, whoa, okay. Well, so thank you for that.
Oh, no, it's important. I think this is something, and I think many of your songs and the way you've lived your life speaks to that. I mean, you've not just written songs about social struggles and peace and building a better world but you've kind of pushed the envelope about how we think about one another as human beings.
I hope so. I had every intention of working in Hollywood and going to New York and being a Broadway artist, and there were just circumstances that came along when I was in my early 20s that kept pulling me into the drama of our animal, of our human species, and who are we, and how do we behave, and how do we treat one another. And it just took my life in a different direction, and I look at it now with great surprise, but I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do that. Now, that doesn't mean I don't still love Broadway shows. I just saw Cabaret with Alan Cummings, and oh my gosh, it was extraordinary. But I love the work that I get to do, and I love that the audiences that show up at the concert are people who are doing some kind of heart work, whether it's through their church or whether it's through their social change organizations or maybe their school teachers or their nurses or their Vietnam veterans or Iraqi, Afghani veterans, it's people dealing with cancer, all the stuff that comes around in our lives. And there they all are, not necessarily knowing one another, but they're in the audience and we start singing together. And there's something that anchors everybody together when you sing. Of course, Pete Seeger taught us all that.
Yes.
And
yes.
I just love my audiences, and I hope anybody who's listening to this who's feeling, I don't know, alone or despair or tired or frustrated or cynical or hopeful, whichever one of those things, but it is actually kind of in a very entertaining and fun way, can be almost like a healing. And we love doing this work, and we love the audiences who come and sing with us.
There's a couple of things I wanted to ask you out of what you just said, and also I've been thinking about. I mean, I've been listening to your music for a long time.
Well,
a long time.
For that.
A long time. 40 years at least.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, but you said you did start out on Broadway, because you started out in the musical Hair, but then Kent State happened, the anti-war movement happened, and you actually shifted what could have been this star, quote unquote, Broadway star-studded career, and joined this thing called FTA, Free the Army, this anti-war roadshow you did, right? Back in the early 70s.
I did, and I didn't even know what some of the words we were using meant, you know, things like the military-industrial complex, and I would quietly go, geez, I wonder what that is. And we were run over to the Philippines. There was martial law. I didn't know what martial law was. It was just like an incredible university for me of understanding international politics, what if some of the foreign policy was in the United States, how our children were used in the military, and soldiers really taught me. They were some of the first teachers I had to let me know how things were going. They were wonderful. And learning about racism, learning about gender issues. It was just all, in about a six-month period of time, it was just wham, wham, wham. And I just, I somehow kept on my feet. I landed so that I could keep going. And I found it also interesting, not easy, it's really hard as a 22-year-old rural farm kid to come into a large urban environment at the height of people fighting racism and be called a racist and have to go, wow, I guess I better think about that. And instead of getting defensive and saying, well, no, I'm not. I remember doing that, saying, I can't be a racist. I'm from the North. And so, I think there might be a different way one has to look at this. And everything that I sing about has happened to me, you know. I mean, I had to learn my lessons. And so I think one of the reasons the show doesn't come across as preachy or accusatory or any of those things, and it actually has a lot of humor in it, is because I'm telling my own story about having to face these huge issues as just a little tiny person on the planet.
And, it's a little teeny tiny person on the planet. So
with my hand up saying, well, can I ask a question, please?
So I'm not surprised that your personality comes through here as listening to you all these years, seeing you on stage a few times and listening to you, that I can hear this laughter in your heart. I think that says a great deal about who you are. This new album you're doing, Peace Becomes You, it's the first piece you've done in a bunch of years. And I can even hear in some, I listened to it last night and this morning online, and it that love of the show tune is in you.
I think so.
Right?
I'm working on a documentary film, one of those things that will take 5 to 10 years to complete.
But right.
One of the people who was interviewed for it was Tyne Daly, the wonderful actress.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was one of the questions we were kind of asking her is how, when she's known my music a long time and we've been acquaintances, and how she thought the fact that I came from that Broadway cabaret instinct affected the way in which I do folk music. And it's really been fun to listen to her talk about that because she's such a great craftswoman. And I believe that coming out of the theatrical background probably was the major influence in my work, right up there next to having the opportunity to work with Dr. Bernice Johnson-Regan, the founder of Sweet Honey and the Rock. I mean, I've had and traveled with Pete and Arlo and Ronnie Gilbert, and I've had extraordinary influences in my life, but that theatrical piece has been equally influential because storytelling, of course, is theater. And I love
right.
figuring out ways in which to tell the most impossible stories. Somewhere along the way, I learned that there's nothing we can't talk about if we can figure out how to do it in a way that doesn't shut down the listener, because some of these things are so difficult. But we have to find a way to talk about everything, and I've tried to figure out how to write about it through music.
And you have done so. I mean, and you've played with some of the most amazing people, and you mentioned, I heard earlier, Bernice Johnson-Regan. I mean, when did you first meet her? When did you start singing with her?
Well, I heard her first record probably somewhere in the mid-70s, and we reached out to her because just so moved by it, wondering what kind of, just to want to talk to her and meet her. And
right.
I invited her to go with me to Japan because I had been asked to come to a large international gathering around the A&H bomb that happened every year in Japan, and they said, would I come and represent the sort of progressive United States point of view? And I said, well, I actually don't represent that by myself, but can I bring a small delegation so that people can speak for themselves? And they agreed to it. So Bernice came with me, and Dr. Regan's so informed and so powerfully talented and so articulate that it was great to travel with her, and we started to get to know one another. And she's been a really strong influence for me. I learned so much from her. And a while ago, a friend of mine, Amy Horowitz, who's been involved in culture for a long, long time, put on a gathering at Ohio State, and it was me, Bernice Regan, Harry Belafonte, and Pete Seeger.
Oh, yes,
and
I read about that.
And all on a panel, yeah, talking about political song and how political music or social change activist music has affected public policy. And putting it in that context was very exciting, because so often people kind of dismiss culture in this country as, oh, it's a song, it's a this, it's that. But it can actually be a major influence in how we change ourselves as a people. So that was very exciting to be part of that.
I'm looking forward to really hearing you when you get to Baltimore. I'm glad you are coming as part of Common Ground on the Hill this Wednesday night. So we're going to be looking forward to that, and we'll tell you more about that as we conclude our conversation. But I want to hear a little bit.
If this is all going by too fast, you can go on my website. The concert information's on that at paulinear.com. And there are still tickets available.
Oh, there are many tickets available.
Wonderful community gathering. I think it's a big enough hall that there'll be tickets right up until showtime.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's going to be, well, I'll just let folks know now. It's Wednesday at Common Ground on the Hill at the Emmanuel Episcopal Church, 811 Cathedral Street, 9:30. And you'll be with Jan Martinelli and Emma's Revolutions. And you can go to commongroundonthehill.org or call 410-857-2771. That'll be on our website as well. We're hearing very lately.
And the show is at 7:30. It's an early...
Oh, it says 9:30 on my sheet. 7:30. Okay, good.
Oh, it's 7:30. No, I'm way too old to do a 9:30
show. I hear that. I understand. Good, I can make it then. So,
if it were up to me, we'd gather it for you in the afternoon every day.
You and my wife have the same idea completely. So,
well, I'm going to be 65 in June, and I think I want to start to redefine the way in which we tour because it's crazy.
It is crazy, and it's something you can lower the music just a tad. So one of the things that we didn't have a chance to talk about maybe another day is you talk about how you wrestle with yourself and wrestle with the world. I love the way you came out many, many years ago when you were in love with a woman, and then not unafraid to talk about living the spectrum of pansexuality that we are as human beings, and you're like very unafraid to be very clear about that, which I think is a very powerful move as well.
Well, thanks for saying so. I think it took us a while to quite understand any of this. All of these things have been going on since the beginning of time, but
yes.
In our particular era, when I came into my early feminism in the 70s, there were a lot of secrets that were all locked up in Pandora's box. And if people want to, as far as I'm concerned, if we want to name one thing that feminism did, is we opened up all those boxes and put everything on the table to be talked about.
Amen.
Did we solve all the problems?
No.
But now Oprah can talk about anything she wants. It's because of early feminists who laid that groundwork and said, look, we can talk about rape. We can talk about war. We can talk about gender. We can talk about all those things. And I was really lucky to come along at that time. As hard as it was, we got accused of terrible things, and we got, I think in some ways, kind of wiped out of the memory of that the culture there. People remember the 60s and the anti-war and all that, but oftentimes when you'll read books about the music, there'll be the period of time with Janis Joplin and Bonnie Raitt and Tina Turner, and then it leaps to Melissa Etheridge and Katie Lang and Donnie DeFranco. Which is great. We're really glad they got there. But there's that silent period in between. And that's kind of the work that the women that I worked with were part of. And it's an unacknowledged part. But I think every movement has people who have to lay those bricks down so that the next generation can come racing along and just cross right over. So getting used to the idea that it will not be remembered is hard,
right.
I think, for women my age. But we have to remember not to be discouraged by that. But there's always that bricklaying that has to take place, and I'm glad I was part of it.
I'm glad you're part of it. I'm glad you're coming to Baltimore. Holly Near to me is one of the most beautiful voices with people singing. Just you feel it from everything she's singing, whether it's about love or it's about changing our society, about freedom and justice, whatever it is she is writing about and singing about. You'll have a chance to see her this Wednesday night, Common Ground on the Hill. Just come to Emmanuel Episcopal Church. Concert starts at 7:30, 811 Cathedral Street. You can go to commongroundonthehill.org or call 410-857-2771. All that information will be at steinershow.org, and join us there for Holly Near. She's coming to town, and I'm not going to miss this. I have not seen her on stage in maybe 20 years, so I'm looking forward to this myself. Holly Near, I hope this won't be the last time you'll join us on the show.
I hope so. Let's chat again.
Let's do that. You're great.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
And take care.
You too. And she'll be with us this Wednesday night, so please join us for that concert. I also want to invite you all and remember to please join us here at the Mark Steiner Show this Tuesday night for an interfaith discussion about how to teach about good food in our communities and churches and synagogues and mosques with the Pastor Heber Brown, Ari Witkin, and Dr. Jeanette Hablula at the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, 430 East Belvedere Avenue, 7 o'clock. Tuesday night. You can just come and show up. We'd love to have you there. And at 7 o'clock on Thursday night, we're going to have a lively discussion with Chris Leonard, who wrote the book The Meat Racket, The Secret Takeover of America's Food Business. We want you to join us for those two conversations. We'll be taping them both for airing later. You can call 443-804-1252 for more information. The Mark Steiner Show is production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Engineers Andre Milton. Interns Alex Boston. You can podcast the show and hear about our guests and what we're doing at steinershow.org and download everything on iTunes right now. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Mothers are just children.